We're going to talk about learning tonight, the concept of learning, and I want to give it to you in two sessions. This first session won't be as long as the one last night. It'll be probably about 30, 35 minutes, and then the second session, we'll take a break. The second session is probably about 20, so won't be too long tonight. But I'd like to talk to you, first of all, just kind of about the concept of learning, and then we'll get some practical tips. But let me share with you just as a kind of a motivational type introduction to this session. Let me share with you a concept that is very, very, very challenging to me. Let me turn to a verse of Scripture that I haven't memorized. I don't think I plan to memorize it. I might one of these days. But Genesis 41:14, I think it is. Let me read you this verse. Then Pharaoh sent and called for Joseph, and they hurriedly brought him out of the dungeon. And when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came to Pharaoh. Next verse says, and Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have had a dream. And he presents his problem. Now they, hi, Bob. Glad to see you guys made it in. The thing here about Joseph is that he got word one day that Pharaoh wanted to see him, and he hurriedly changed his clothes, shaved himself, cleaned up, and stood before Pharaoh, just like that. And Pharaoh said, I got a problem. And he presented the problem to Joseph, and Joseph said, well, you know, God's in that business, and I've got a little training in that sphere, and I think God will use me to interpret that dream, and he did. Now, the thing that stands out to me about that verse is that at this time in Joseph's life, there was no second chance. I mean, he either had the goods or he didn't. He was either ready or he wasn't, because when it says Pharaoh called him, he hurriedly changed his clothes, shaved himself, and stood before Pharaoh, hurriedly. And either he was ready, either he was in touch with God and walking with God in the midst of that rotten dungeon to the point where God could speak through this man, or he wasn't. But there was no time to beef up on the dream interpretation 101 or whatever it was. There was no time. He either was in intimate fellowship with God and walking with God in such a way that God could use him at that point, or he had it. But there was no chance for a second chance. There was no chance to brush up, no chance to practice, or hey, God, our intimate, you know, quick prayer or anything. He was either ready or he wasn't. And I like to call this little concept of self-development. I mean, the guy was ready. Let me give you another one. 1 Samuel 16:18. This one's even more startling than the second one. Now, the background here is that Saul is being troubled by an evil spirit from God, and he gets a little uptight when this evil spirit comes along and starts throwing spears and kicking furniture around and so forth. And so the men around him got a little concerned about this and suggested that maybe he'd call in someone who can play on a harp or something and cool him down during these times when this evil spirit is troubling him. And they thought, you know, anything to salvage furniture. And so they thought it was a good idea. Here's what it says. Saul thought it was a good idea, so he said, provide for me now a man who can play well and bring him to me. Now listen to this. This is just rocks me good. Then one of the young men answered and said, behold, I have seen a son of Jesse, the Bethlehemite, who is a skillful musician, a mighty man of valor, a warrior, one prudent in speech, and a handsome man, and the Lord is with him. So Saul sent messengers to Jesse and said, send me your son David, who is with the flock. Now here's a guy out taking care of a bunch of sheep, you know, throwing rocks at trees and picking up sticks and batting rocks and stuff like that. Out there taking care of a bunch of sheep. I think he was the youngest son in the family, and usually the youngest son got the dirty duty, and there's no exception. Here David was, youngest kid, out there taking care of the sheep. But somewhere over the course of that time, he became a skillful musician, a very valiant warrior, skillful warrior, one prudent in speech, a wise man, handsome, took care of himself. All that time out there taking care of a bunch of sheep. And I've with Leroy, we on our way back from Beirut, stopped into flew into Tel Aviv and spent 4 days in Israel. And I've seen that country where they take care of those sheep around Jerusalem and Bethlehem and Hebron and that area. And it's not very attractive country. It's steep hills, rocks. It's just not attractive at all. But here's this man out here taking care of the sheep. But in the meantime, he really prepared himself. And when Saul needed somebody to step into his kingdom, right next to him is kind of his aide-de-camp, to step in and be his man that would minister to him. And David was man. And the guy said, "Hey, I know a guy. Man, in fact, he's got several characteristics. He's a skillful warrior and he's a good musician, and et cetera, et cetera." And Saul says, "Okay, you go get me that guy. That sounds like the man I'm looking for." And he brought him. It was his moment in history. And God had, and he was a man that God could place his hand on, and he became kind of the man of the hour. Well, the question that we have to ask ourselves at this point is, are we preparing ourselves for what God might want to use us for? Or are we kind of cruising through life, much like the pinball that I chatted with you a little bit about last night? Are you becoming? Are you increasing in learning? Are you growing day by day? Are you becoming? Are you growing towards some goal of trying to be some type of person or developing yourself into a useful man of God or woman of God? I talked to Walden Scott one day and about this concept of self-development, and Scotty, of course, has one of the best programs and most challenging programs I've ever heard about it, on this topic. And Scotty said that, I said, "Well, Scotty, what are you doing?" He "Well, each year he takes a subject, and it may be architecture or art, or and one year he took the guitar with him everywhere he went. He learned to play the guitar. Everywhere, you know, take this big luggy thing aboard an airplane, and you know, he'd get someplace and go to a motel room and sit there and plunk on this guitar, you know, trying to learn how to play the guitar. Did that for 2 years. I asked him, I said, "Well, why do you do all this thing, Scott?" And he said, "Well, because I want to be a bigger man. I want to be more usable, more available to God. And so I am continually developing myself in areas where I'm weak, in areas where I know very little, that I might be more available. I want to be a bigger man for God." And bigger in the sense that he's available. God can use him, and he wants to be that way. And he continually works on that. Probably one of the most challenging programs of personal development of anybody I've ever known. Very consistent at it. He really works at it. And that's his motivation. Well, gang, what I want to just chat with you, that I want to use that tonight a little bit. Let me give you a couple more of these. This is kind of exciting to me. Look at Acts chapter 13. This is the Apostle Paul. By the way, I read this verse, and from that point on, I've made some personal application of this verse. Look at Acts 13. I think it's 13. Yeah. Acts 13:13 says, "Now Paul and his companions put out to sea from Paphos and came to Perga and Pamphylia, and John left them and returned to Jerusalem." Let's see. "But going on, they arrived at Pisidian Antioch, and on the Sabbath day they went into the synagogue and sat down. And after the reading of the law and the prophets, the synagogue officials sent to them, saying, 'Brethren, if you have any word of exhortation for the people, say it.'" Let me ask you something tonight. If all of a sudden I really, you know, kind of got dizzy or something and just said, "Hey, gang, I feel like I'm about to faint. I can't hack it tonight. I got to go sit down. One of you guys come up and take over and share something with us, okay?" Would you have anything? You got anything to share? God alive and real to you? I was in church 2 Sundays ago, and the pastor was out of town. The youth director had been carrying most of the responsibilities while he was gone, and it came to the Sunday morning service, and he got about 10 minutes into his sermon and turned around to the man, one of the deacons that was up on the platform with him, and said, I'm just about to faint." The guy was just wrung out. And he said, I'm very dizzy." And he turned and walked off the platform. And that was it. Well, I have filled in for the pastor there before, and so I begin to, first thing that hit my mind is, do I have anything to share with these people? That's the first thing that hit my mind. Well, the guy on the platform happened to be one of the adult Sunday school teachers, and they were going through 1 Samuel, and he had studied the lesson that he shared that morning, and he'd also studied the next chapter for the following Sunday, and he got up and just shared the next chapter. And so he had something. He just picked up and filled right in for it. Now, twice I've seen that happen. I saw it once in a BSU meeting. when I was at Louisiana College, a guy that was speaking at Vespers had to leave. He just got dizzy or something and just had to leave. But they came in and he says, brethren, if you've any word of exhortation for the people, say it. Let's hear what you've got to say. And he was ready. And man, he laid it on. Just straight and clear. And it would really minister to them. Many, many people converted right there in Antioch. Let me give you another one. John 18, verses 28. This is a negative example. A negative example of the concept of being prepared. John 20, verse 28. If you want to make a note of it, this is John 18, 28. And it goes down to 19:16 to get the full gist of it. Listen to this. John 18, 28. They led Jesus, therefore, from Caiaphas into the praetorium, and it was early, very early. And they themselves did not enter into the praetorium in order that they might not be defiled, but might eat the Passover. Pilate therefore went out to them and said, what accusation do you bring against this man? I wrote in the margin of my Bible this note. Without prior notice, very early one morning, Pilate awoke, suddenly confronted with a decision so important it would affect every person in the world. It was his moment in history, and he wasn't ready. He had not trained himself for this big of a challenge. He had been governor over Judea during the entire time of John the Baptist and Jesus, and he knew nothing of this people. He was governor over this people the entire time of John the Baptist and Jesus, and he was ignorant of these people. He was no more prepared to rule this people properly and make a judgment concerning these people than any common Roman soldier. He was ignorant. And since that time, when all of a sudden, early one morning, without prior notice, he was confronted with a decision like this, what to do with this man? Hey, how about this man, Jesus? And he was so ill-prepared that from this point on in history, the world has labeled him one of the biggest fools that ever existed. He blew it. Because he was not ready. I cross-reference that with first part of Luke chapter 3, first few verses, and that tells about how when he was governor, when John the Baptist was there and Jesus and so forth, he was the governor. Well, gang, I ran a training program 2 summers ago in Portland, Oregon at Multnomah School of the Bible. There was another training program downtown in Portland called PIT, Portland Inner City Training. And what they'd done, taken about 15 guys and gone down right in the very heart of Portland and begin to work with some of the underprivileged high school children, high school kids, and try to help them to walk with God and minister to others. There was a fellow named Mike Kotucky who was heading this program up, and we took the Multnomah program down to Portland a couple of times and just had a couple of common functions with them. I think Leroy came through one time, Leroy Iams, and we both went down and he spoke to us there. And I was asking a fellow from California who was in that program, a guy named Jerry Swanson, and Jerry is now in Indonesia as a missionary, and I was chatting with Jerry and I said, Jerry, you enjoying the program? Oh, yeah. You learn anything? Oh, yeah. I said, well, tell me about it. And he said, you know, this guy, Kotucky, has got so much to offer. He said, man, he has helped me administratively. He's helped me to get myself personally organized. Man, from the Word of God, it's unbelievable how he shares. He's helped me in cooking. Man, he understands kitchen, the way he's got the kitchen arranged and everything, and just spices and how to work. He said, I've never seen a man that's got so much to offer. And when he said that statement, that really lodged. It was just like an arrow with barbs on it. It just really lodged in me. I could not shake that. This man has so much to offer. And I evaluated myself. You know, I wonder if I were to meet a guy or begin to spend time with anybody or anything like that, if I could be classified as a man who has so much to offer. Now, what do you think this guy, his credential was? You know, he raised in high school and so forth. He'd gotten out of high school and gone into the Navy. Spent 4 years in the Navy and got out of the Navy. And he was probably in his freshman or sophomore year in college. And yet he knew about personal organization. He knew about, he had a fantastic library, had good reading habits. He knew about cooking. He knew about the use of spices. Where did he learn all that stuff? knew about clothing, how to select clothes and pair stuff up and colors and fashions and so on. Where do you learn all that stuff? He didn't learn it in the Navy. Well, gang, here's a man that just wanted to prepare himself. He wanted to have something to offer, and he did. Well, we want to talk about learning tonight, okay? That's what we want to talk about, learning. But I would like to, for you to consider and keep in mind the question is, do I have anything to offer? And as the years go by, or as the months go by, am I becoming someone who has more to offer? Do I have anything to offer people? I mean, if I got an opportunity to minister, if I found somebody that wanted to know God or wanted to walk with Christ or wanted some help in their personal life, or had some problems physically or socially, I mean, could I help him? Let me give you just one little area where this can be very applicable, and that is in your living situations. In January 1963, I transferred to Texas A&M, and later on moved in with a little short guy named Bill Gibbs. And he had some navigator training, and I didn't know what that was, but I knew that he had something in his life that I wanted. I was extremely attracted to this man's life, and I got the opportunity to live with him. And I moved in, and first day we were in there together, we took a broom, swept out the room and everything, and got the cobwebs and everything out of the dorm room. And then I noticed he broke out of a mop, and we started mopping the floor. So I thought, well, you know, once a quarter's okay, you know. So we kind of mopped the floor. I mean, it's quite a radical change for me. My first semester in college, I never changed sheets. I did really change them. I really did. I shouldn't say that, because I took them off the bed this way and turned them around and put them that way. So, and then about three quarters of the way through, honestly, about three quarters of the way through, I flipped it over. And, so I really did change. Wow. I can still see those sheets. That was true. But anyway, this guy scrubbed the floor, you know. And then he broke out a can of Johnson's Paste Whack, and we got on our hands and knees with little rags, and we waxed the floor at A&M. We waxed the floor. And then we polished it. Then we took out some Babo cleanser and stuff and cleaned the sink and the mirror and everything, the bathroom and the commode. I mean, we just, boy, I tell you, I couldn't believe this guy. And I noticed how he kept his desk. He just squared away. You know, he had his books kind of lined across here and pencil stuff here, and it was just kind of neat, squared away. Was that way all the time. Opened the closet door, and there they were, shirts, you know, trousers and just shoes, you know. And in my mind, we're kind of in a neat pile, you know, just kind of take them off and throw them. Mine were kind of over in that direction, but I soon squared that away. I just couldn't live with the intimidation. And so I finally squared mine away. But he was really a different guy. And these pagans that were in the Corps of Cadets, you know, they have to keep their rooms clean. I mean, they have room inspection every day, so they have to keep theirs clean. They'd come over to our rooms, a bunch of old grody civilians, and they'd look at our room, and they just couldn't believe it, because ours was better than theirs. Well, I began to learn from this guy about personal organization and cleanliness. He made his bed every morning and stuff like that. I mean, his room was just really squared away. And then every morning at 6, he'd get up for his quiet. Well, I got up at 6, and he was always up when I got up. He would wake up a few minutes before 6 and get up, and he'd always be in the Word in prayer when I got up at 6 every morning. I remember one night he studied for a test until 3 o'clock, and I asked him, because I knew he was studying late that night. The next morning I asked him, I said, well, what time did you go to bed? And he said, 3. I said, you mean you studied till 3 o'clock? And he said, well, no, I didn't study till 3 o'clock. I went to bed at 3. I said, what'd you do? He said, well, I finished studying about 2:30 or so, and I just wanted to get some time for the Lord. So I went down and sat down under a street lamp so I wouldn't wake you up with a light, and just review some verses and spend some time in prayer. Just wanted to get some time with God after all that studying. And that was the kind of guy I was living with. Well, gang, I have never recovered from that. I've never recovered from that, from the exposure to this one man's life. My life has never been the same from that one semester I lived with that guy. It was just unbelievable. His heart, the way he prayed, the way he studied, his heart for people, his heart for God, the way he just kind of bulldoggedly stuck with it, you know, I just never recovered from that. And I remember the summer of 63, I had the privilege of living with Wainwright and Max Barnett and a guy named John Dozier and a few other of us lived on Fifth Street in Dallas. And I stayed in the same room with Max, where Max was, just a big old room. And there were about 12 of us in this house, and we shared this big old room. And I slept in the bunk bed on this side of the room, and Max just had a mattress. It was on the floor over this side of the room. And I can remember getting in my bed at night, so many nights, almost night after night after night, and I'd look across the room, and Max would be down on his knees, you know, against that little mattress, praying. Almost every night when I went to bed, he'd be over there praying. And the exposure, you know, I've never gotten over that little summer that I spent with Max. I lived in the same room with him, and his heart and the counsel that he gave me this summer. I remember one time, during that summer, I really went through it. I got the wise idea that, from a tape by Dawson Trotman, that if you would pray and ask God to let you suffer, then that'd help you to be more obedient. That's Hebrews 5:8. You know, though he were a son, yet learned he obedience by the things which he suffered. So Dawson prayed, "Boy, God, let me suffer that I might learn obedience." I thought that sounded pretty good. And so I began to pray that. Boy, I really prayed it fervently over that, that God would let me suffer that I might learn obedience. And so he let me suffer. I just hated it. It was terrible. Devastating. I finally got down to A&M after that summer was over. And one day I was in a prayer room down at A&M on Saturday nights. I used to go to the BSU and it wouldn't be very many people over there. So I'd go in the prayer room or something like that. There were two prayer rooms, and I'd go in one of them and close the door and turn on the light and just read the Bible. A good quiet time because nobody's over there much on Saturdays. I remember one night I was reading my Bible and a verse reminded me of that past summer, and I just broke down and wept just remembering about it. It was really a devastating summer, but I can still remember the counsel that Max gave me when I was going through that. Very influential. I can almost give it to you word for word, what he gave me. It meant so much, and it did so much in my life. Well, gang, the thing I want to talk to you about is the fact that you can learn so much day by day by day from the people with whom you live, in your classes, walking to and fro on this campus, fellowshipping, in your Bible studies. You can learn so much. You can be different people by the time you graduate. Your folks won't even recognize you. You can, if the heart is there, if you want to. I want to share just a few things with you that might help you. I'll give you just a verse, about three or four verses of Scripture here, and then a couple of principles out of that, okay? Let's turn to Proverbs chapter 24, about verse 30. This is a very a passage of Scripture that has greatly ministered to my life. One day I was down at my little office downtown, and I needed to go to the campus, and so it was about a 30-minute walk, so I started walking out to the campus. Didn't have a car that particular day, so I was just walking out to campus, and I got my Bible out, and I just kind of turned it over. And held it like this. And as I walked out to the campus, I memorized these five verses of Scripture, Proverbs 24, 30 through 34. And on the way back, I tried to quote it, and I couldn't. And so I had to take my Bible out and kind of relearn it again on the way back. But just as I was getting back to my office, I asked myself, well, did you learn anything? Because that's what this verse says. It says, I passed by the field of the sluggard and by the vineyard of the man lacking sense, and behold, it was completely overgrown with thistles. Its surface was covered with nettles, and the stone wall was broken down. That's what he saw. And he makes a fantastic statement. He said, when I saw, I reflected upon it. I looked and received instruction. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Then your poverty will come as a robber, and your want like an armed man. And I got back to my office and said, well, Chuck, you just spent 1 hour walking along. Did you see anything that you learned? And I'm not sure I did. I don't think I learned a thing. I spent 1 hour walking, 1 hour of my life, and I didn't learn anything. And of course, I'd been walking along. I memorized these five verses. And then I begin to think, gang, I just wonder if my life is not characterized by that. Just kind of going through life day by day, an hour at a time, not really learning anything. One day I was at Monoma School of the Bible, and I was walking to class, and our routine was a kind of a thing where We had a test every morning at 9 o'clock, and breakfast was at 8. So we'd go to breakfast, and we'd go to Rosemary. You were there that summer, weren't you? Yeah, Rosemary was there that summer. So we'd go to breakfast, and 8 o'clock, and then it was just a mass cram session from about 8:15 to 9, because you had this test at 9 o'clock. So just cram like crazy, you know, trying to get ready for this quiz. Then you go to take a quiz, then you go to class from there till 12. Lunch was at 12, and work started about 12:30. We'd work to 5:30, come eat dinner, go outside and play a game of volleyball or two, and go to the dorm and start studying. And that was it. So I'd get up and have a little quiet time, walk to class, review a few verses on my way to breakfast, study, class, work, volleyball, study. And that was kind of the, you know, it was kind of the day. So I'm walking to work one day, you know, going from a little housing unit down to the dining hall, and I'm walking along against the verses, you know, and just trying along and just stumbling along, and all of a sudden I realize, you know, there may be something happening around you. Oh, yeah. And I realized just what a rut I was in, what a routine I was in. I wasn't learning anything. I was going to these classes, and the guy was sharing some things, and I was taking notes. So I had a good, what we used to call down the evening, good old brown brain. You know, the brown back notebook isn't my brown brain. Everything's in here. And so just writing down. But as far as my life, I was in a rut. Well, this guy walked by a field, and it didn't say, it didn't have a sign up there saying Sluggard's Field, but it was a field. But he called it that. I passed by the field of the Sluggard, and he called it that. Now, let me give you three little principles here. First of all, the principle of observation. Make valid observations. Gang, work at this. Work at this. Work at this. Learning to make valid observations. He saw two things. One, he saw it was overgrown with weeds, with thistles and nettles. And then the second thing he saw was that the boundaries had been broken down. These stone walls were boundaries, and they'd been broken down. The second principle is the principle of thinking through on your observations. And he expresses that when he says, I saw, I reflected upon it, I looked and received instruction. Then the third principle was coming to conclusions. In other words, it's not just a few scattered thoughts, but you try to get your thoughts lined up, you think through on it, and you think it out to a logical conclusion. And that's what he did. He came to several conclusions. And then I put a little parenthesis out here, not just any conclusion, but conclusions as to principles of life, conclusions as to things that are valid in life. You know, he could pass by and say, you know, he concluded that the guy needed to pull his weeds. And that would have been a conclusion. Yeah, well, the guy needs to pull his weeds. But he didn't. He concluded. Well, I wrote down three things. Let me just give them to you. He had three conclusions. Number one is that poverty results from sluggardly action. He concluded that. That poverty results from sluggardly action. Now, gang, in this situation, it was an agrarian situation here. Agriculture was the application. But, you know, I really think his application was in the area of life. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of your hands to rest. Then your poverty will come as a robber, and you won't like an armed man. I think he was talking about life. And I think you can draw a lot of conclusions. You can goof around during your semester, and at the end of your poverty at the end of the semester will be just bad grades. You'll have D's and C's instead of B's and A's. Your poverty will be just very poor grades because of your sluggardly action. But gang, poverty will result from sluggardly action. It may be in the area of academics. It may be in the area of the spiritual life. It may be in the area of the physical life. You can lay in that bed and take that elevator or whatever you want to do and wind up to be a nice little plump slob. It'll work every time. And your poverty might be from the result of sluggardly action in the area of exercise. But gang, it will come. Poverty results from sluggardly action. Here's another one that he concluded. That littleness mounts up to bigness. You don't have to waste big blocks of time and to waste your life. You can just waste a little time here and a little time there and you've wasted your life. Because little will mount up to big. Just waste a little here, waste a little time there, waste a little time there. And boy, at the end of the semester, you are hurting. Aren't you? You ever experienced that one? kind of goof off a little here, play a little handball over here, catch a flick over here, go get a cup with the boys over here. And then that term paper just hadn't been written yet, had it? Boy, that thing just growls at you the last 2 weeks of school. Littleness will mount up to bigness. The third conclusion he drew was that the end result of sluggishness is slow, but devastating. It's slow in coming, but when it comes, it wipes out. That the end result of sluggishness is slow, but devastating. And may I make just a slight interruption here? I really believe, gang, that the major lesson in Proverbs, the major lesson of the book of Proverbs, and I just kind of just stumbled onto that this year, and I don't want to preach it as, you know, as truth or something, but it's just a personal opinion. But I believe that the major lesson in the book of Proverbs, that the thing is, the book is trying to get across, if you could just learn this. And to me, that is that your decisions are consequential. There is a result to your decisions. You will live with what you decide. And I think probably, gang, if we could just learn that principle of life, that the decisions you make has a consequence to it. That's not an isolated thing. You can't just make a decision today about what you're going to do today and not suffer from that or not benefit from that. Your decisions have a consequence to it. And I think that's a major lesson of the book of Proverbs. I memorized a verse just the other day out of Proverbs. It says, the sluggard does not plow after the autumn, so he begs during the harvest and has nothing. Now, out in California, believe it or not, I guess California has the image of just having all these people, you know. Well, it does have a lot of people. But it also is a very large farming area. In fact, I read a statement the other day that almost 50% of all the fruits and vegetables grown in the United States are grown in California. It has a San Joaquin Valley that's about 400 miles long and about 100 miles wide. And you can just look as far as you can see, and it's nothing but groves and orchards, and just as far as you can see. Miles upon miles upon miles. Well, they tell me that, see, what happens is they'll plant the crops and then they'll harvest the crop, and then they immediately begin to prepare the ground for next year's planting. The last thing they do that year is they prepare for next year. And I think what this verse is saying is that if you don't plan ahead, you're going to reap the result of that. And it illustrates it by saying that the sluggard does not plow after the autumn, so when it comes time for harvest next year, he begs and has nothing. The point here is that your decision not to plow now, when it's kind of getting rainy and cold, your decision not to plow now, you're going to suffer from that down the road. Your decisions are consequential. There's something that's going to result from that decision that you just made. The soul of the sluggard desires and has nothing, but the soul of the diligent shall be made fat or healthy. The diligent soul shall be made healthy. The guy who is diligent and lives that way, there's a result of that. There's a consequence of that type of life. I think it's a major lesson in the book of Proverbs. Well, there are three principles, okay? Make valid observations, think through, and draw conclusions as to life. Why don't we just stop there for a minute? Anybody have any questions? Any questions you'd like to ask about this? I think what we'll do is just go ahead and take a break now. And then I want to come back and give you some practical tips on making observations. Let me just look at it quickly. And I want to give you, I got five characteristics of a learner, and some practical tips that I'd just like to read to you on how to be a learner, practical tips on how to learn.